In a year that has been so improbable, the impossible has happened.
A shot on Elo. Good! The Bulls win it!
You know what time it is.
The most amazing, sensational, dramatic.
Oh, blocked by James! LeBron James with the rejection!
Holy cow! Oh my God! I don't believe it! It just continues!
Wake up in the morning, I piss excellence.
Welcome back into another episode of the Sports Hour. This is Mitch Moe.
And this is Dallin. Guys, welcome in to the first episode of August. Oh, is that Yoda?
I had something in my mouth. Sorry.
Today's, am I the only one that
first
heard
episode
Yoda?
In August it is.
I hope I'm not the only one that heard Yoda on Dagobah at that moment. Yes, it is. Oh, my God. I love that. It is. Yes.
Yeah.
Mitch, I love you. You're great. This is fantastic.
Yeah.
It's August 3rd. It's the first episode in August. And we are like, what, less than a week away from football, right? The preseason game is like this weekend, I think, right? I mean, it
tomorrow.
Is like it's tomorrow. Oh, my goodness.
It's a Thursday night preseason game, I thought, right?
You're probably right. I'm just not aware. That is, yeah, and we are that, I mean, that's where we're at as far as the calendar goes. Thick of it.
It's the Hall of Fame game, so it's going to be a bunch of guys we'll probably never hear of again.
Trevor Lawrence isn't even playing. I know Travis Etienne isn't even playing in it for the Jags, but it still
football.
Signifies, you know, that we're
it's
back.
Football. We're back. We're back, baby. We're back. I love it.
We've got a fun podcast today. A bunch of news to hit on. Most of the news isn't fun, I will say that. But after we get through a lot of necessary stuff in the news, we will have some fun on the back end of the podcast here. Our college football preview, first time ever doing this on the Sports Hour podcast, 4+ years into this, Mitch, our first college football season preview. We're going to go conference by conference through the Power Five and then the Group of Five and preview who we think are the best teams, some of the best players in the conference as we get ready for the college football season, which begins in like 3 weeks. Week zero of the college football season is like 3 weeks from Saturday. That's how quick that is upon us. So this felt like the right time to do this before we get into a lot of our NFL season previews.
I'm so excited. I'm so excited for this college football preview. I'm so excited for the return of the campus tour. Football season is among us, folks. Buckle up, Broncos Nation. Let's ride. We got
Broncos
football.
Country.
Broncos
let's
country.
Ride.
Let's ride.
Broncos country. Let's ride.
I do want to give a special, just quick little shout out to Chris and Lee, two guys that I work with that are going to be new listeners to the podcast. Now they found out that we do a podcast. So shout out to them and
welcome
aboard this pirate ship of the Sports Hour. We thank you for listening, guys. But yeah, I'm so excited for this episode.
It's called a pirate ship?
Pirate ship, yeah.
Okay. I can dig it.
Can you get behind that? Or should I change it up? A spaceship?
No, so here's
going to the moon? Spaceship?
I immediately, my first thought was pirate ship is that's fine. I immediately went to who's the captain now. You know, like there's only one captain on a pirate ship. But there's two co-hosts on this. I don't want one of us to have to be the first mate. Could we be a dual captain ship?
I think we could work it out.
We're like a pirate armada. You know, where we just have a bunch of ships. Everybody has their own ship, and then it's us at the lead of our armada of pirates.
We're just like we're our own ship. But we're leading the charge.
We're like pirate lieutenants. Yeah.
Captain Dallin Blackbeard, Captain One-Eyed Mitch Moe, and we're just rolling into town to take over the world. that's what we're here to do, right? Maybe? I don't know.
Yeah, my beard isn't black. It's a little red. And you're not one-eyed. I'd say colorblind, Captain Mitch Moe, but that would be, yeah, that's okay.
Oh, that's low-hanging fruit. That's like, that's low-hanging fruit.
And as you know, I will never cease an opportunity to strike at that low-hanging fruit. You know, is what it is. Yeah, Mitch!
That's right.
We've done enough time musing. Shall we begin this podcast here with the news?
Yeah, I think it's about the right time to get into the news. Let's get into the news and notes around the world of sports. Let's get into the news! Let's ride.
Oh, man. You know, you gotta respect the bit with Russell Wilson. That's all I got
to
say.
You have to. Yeah.
You got to respect the bit. He is consistent. All right, Mitch, let's start off in the NFL. And we're starting strong here with the Deshaun Watson stuff, as that is the biggest news right now, probably in the world of sports, that we're going to be covering. Deshaun Watson, the suspension has come down from the independent third-party judge. This new process, by the way, before we get into this, this is new as of the 2020 CBA, which basically means that cases of player misconduct will be handled by a third-party appointed judge. That's what this happened in this case. And not directly by the commissioner's office, as it was in the past with like Ray Rice and some of those other incidences. That's why this new process has been put into place. And this Deshaun Watson case is the first time that this system and this process has been put to the test, to the actual practical test. But the judge has determined that the suspension for Deshaun Watson should be 6 games for the sexual misconduct. I think it's important to note in this conversation that the judge is basing her ruling off of only 6 of the 24 plus cases or allegations made against Deshaun Watson for sexual misconduct, right? So we understand on the outside, right, that he's been accused 26 plus times, right? I think it's at this point of this behavior. But this judge is only ruling in the case of 6 of those specific cases. So I think that's important to keep in mind here. But she came down on 6 games, which is consistent with what we've seen in the past in the NFL. Ezekiel Elliott had a 6-game suspension. Ben Roethlisberger had a 6-game suspension. So I guess it makes sense on the outside that the number lands on 6. Before we get into more of this, Mitch, I just want to get your reaction to that part of the process, how it played out, and your thoughts on the 6-game number for Deshaun Watson.
I mean, my first reaction is it's not enough. I think that 6 is a pretty disappointing number. Obviously this is from a third party judge that's doing this, handing down the suspension. It's just not enough. I mean, we had one count against Zeke. We had one count against Ben Roethlisberger. I mean, 24 plus counts against Deshaun Watson, I think warrants more than a 6-game suspension out of the gate. It's a little disappointing that this week of a penalty was handed down. I'm not going to say what I wanted to see, because I don't think that's appropriate or necessary to say, but you know, it just seems like a weak suspension right out of the gate, to hand down 6 games. It may fall in line with other instances of sexual misconduct that the NFL has dealt with in the past, but you have to look at the volume of the sexual misconduct allegations. And they're much, much higher in the case of Deshaun Watson.
Yeah. I think that's kind of the complicated thing here, right? With, Ben Roethlisberger and with Ezekiel Elliott, you know, one case, but I mean, we were talking about, you know, cases that include sexual assault, sexual violence, right? And then none of the allegations really pointed toward that with Deshaun Watson. Sexual misconduct for sure, right? Inappropriate behavior for sure, but none of anything to that level. But there were dozens of accusations, dozens of allegations of this behavior. So the just the sheer volume in itself, I agree with you, seems like it should have been more than six games. And Mitch, the NFL agrees with us. And the NFL made it pretty clear through their sources, through reporting anonymous sources, that the NFL was seeking at least a year suspension, and if not an indefinite suspension of at least a year. Well, the NFL announced today, or is reported today, the NFL will be appealing this sentencing of six games. So for those not familiar with this process, this is how it works. In the 2020 CBA that was agreed upon by the players and the league, the personal conduct would go through this third-party judge. After that sentencing was rendered, per the personal conduct policy, and I'm reading here directly, this was tweeted by Adam Schefter, but this is from the policy itself, states that the appeal will be, quote, processed on an expedite, that this is the appeal. The NFL has the right to appeal this case. Roger Goodell has the right to appeal the suspension as the commissioner. This was already agreed upon. It's fully in his rights, and this is what they're doing. This appeal will be, quote, processed on an expedited basis, and the commissioner or his designee, so he can make this decision, Roger Goodell, or a designee of Roger Goodell can make this decision. That person can, quote, overturn, reduce, modify, or increase the discipline previously issued, and it will be final and binding on all parties, end quote. So the commissioner in the league has always had the final say. That was a part of this 2020 CBA. Clearly, if, in my opinion, if this was closer to that year suspension the NFL would have wanted, they probably wouldn't have gone through this process, right? If it was 12 games, do we see an appeal like this? Do we see this push for a longer suspension? Probably not. But at six games, the NFL is not satisfied. They probably aren't going to like the public outcry that's going to come from only a six-game suspension for Deshaun Watson, and they want to save the public face of their own league. So they are seeking an indefinite suspension, again, at least a year. And on top of that, it was reported by Jeff Darlington today of ESPN that they are also seeking a monetary fine to be associated with this, because the Cleveland Browns laid out their contract with Deshaun Watson in a way that he was only due $1 million this year total. So whatever he missed out on not playing was going to basically be a not penalty at all. He had a $45 million signing bonus he's already earned. So the NFL is not only seeking a year of at least a year of sitting out, but also a fine of probably millions of dollars to rightfully punish Deshaun Watson monetarily for his actions. Again, we'll see how this plays out. The commissioner or his designee will be able to decide what this punishment is, but it will be final. Just before we get into this, there will likely be an appeal. This appeal could go to federal court. It could go to the Supreme Court, legitimately, in the contest from Deshaun Watson and the Players Association. But in the CBA, it is clearly stated that Roger Goodell and this decision will be final, and that was already agreed upon. So we're probably looking at a long, drawn-out fight that likely concludes with Deshaun Watson missing out on the entire season next year, likely being fined millions of dollars, and maybe even more, I mean, as far as the suspension goes. But we are in an interesting case right now as it really sits in the commissioner's hands and what he will want to do. Mitch, what are your thoughts on this? And obviously, we both wanted, I guess we both feel more comfortable with a longer suspension for Deshaun Watson, but do you feel comfortable with the way this is going to play out now that it is in the commissioner's hands?
Yes and no, because we know what the NFL's, we know what the NFL was looking for, right? They were looking for that year suspension. It also doesn't feel good that it's in Roger Goodell's hands again, and it's kind of almost like a screw you, I'm judge, jury, executioner, and I'm going to make this decision. I really hope that Roger Goodell follows through with what the rest of the NFL is looking for in the suspension, which is, you know, the year, the monetary penalty that he's going to take. Just don't tack on four games and call 10 games good. And that's what I really fear, that he's not going to be aggressive enough in this, which I feel like would be a serious blow to not just Roger Goodell, like he could take another serious blow as it is, but to the league as a whole, that they don't take this type of stuff seriously, because it's come up over and over and over again. And it's never been really the right penalty has never been really handed down. So I have confidence that it's going to get handled the right way. It's just an unsettling feeling that it's kind of in the hands of Roger Goodell right now.
Yeah, I guess I would say the good news is that as it is stated in the policy, his decision is final. So if he does stick with their guns, if the NFL does stick with their guns and say, we wanted an indefinite suspension, we want at least a year, we're going to suspend him indefinitely, you're going to sit out all of the 2022 season, and then we'll have a conversation next offseason about what it looks like. The Deshaun Watson, the Players Association, they can appeal. They could do all the appealing that they want, but ultimately the policy is pretty clear and it was already agreed upon, and that's going to be the case. So with that said, I do feel more confident that the NFL will lay down a fair penalty for what Deshaun Watson has done. I think part of this too, Mitch, that's really frustrating for me is Adam Schefter reported this today, that Deshaun Watson basically doesn't feel like this is fair. Doesn't feel like he should serve any penalty, doesn't feel like he's done anything wrong. And yet at the same time, the Browns have put out this statement. The owner, Jimmy Haslam, put out a statement just a few days ago saying Deshaun Watson has shown remorse for his actions. Has he shown any remorse if he's saying behind the scenes he doesn't feel like he should be punished at all? If he doesn't feel like he has anything to be, you know, that he doesn't deserve any of this? That to me, if that's his behavior, then you're the NFL. You have to stick that indefinite suspension on him, suspend him for the whole year, cost him tens of millions of dollars, and set a precedent in this league that that behavior is not okay. And again, it's in the hands of the commissioner and or his designee, and we'll see how this is handled. But as it stated, it could happen very quickly. They could expedite this process. This could be a very quick. Again, the appeal process may be a little while after that, but the NFL could come to this ruling very quickly, and we'll see how this plays out. But certainly something to monitor. I know that we're talking about this outside of just the football field scope. We do talk about supports here, though. So on the field, obviously, this greatly affects the Browns as far as how much he misses. If it's six games, season's largely intact. If he's out the whole season, their playoff hopes are a lot more slim with Jacoby Brissett. Would they make a move for Jimmy Garoppolo? Things to consider over the next couple of weeks as we see this play out.
Yeah. I don't have much more to say. I'm going to bite my tongue on the things I really want to say about Deshaun Watson. That's what I'm going to do.
It's just a shitty situation. It just sucks. And it even sucks to talk about the football aspect of it, just because like that is so secondary to everything else in this conversation. You know what I mean? That it's just,
it almost delegitimizes it to talk about the second, that's the football side of it. You know, it really does. It's just, a shitty situation, man.
Mitch, let's, speaking of shitty situations, we're going to move on to another one. The Miami Dolphins are in some trouble. The NFL has stripped the Miami Dolphins of a 2023 first round pick and fined the owner, Stephen Ross, $1.5 million for violations of league policies relating to the integrity of the game, aka tampering with Tom Brady and Sean Payton. This stems from the Brian Flores lawsuit against the NFL, right? The racial discrimination. He also reported in that he had been asked by Dolphins ownership to lose games. And in that investigation came about the contact with Tom Brady. For those not familiar, the plan behind the scenes for the Dolphins was to try to get Tom Brady and Sean Payton in Miami for this upcoming 2022 season. It fell through. Tom Brady retired, unretired. Sean Payton retired and will sit out a whole year. And here now we are. With a tampering charge against the Miami Dolphins and an owner of the league, Stephen Ross, tampering with an active player, an active head coach, a 2023 first round pick, Mitch, is a That's a big punishment. That is a real punishment. That's not just like some whatever. They also forfeited 2024 third, but a first round pick, $1.5 million for the owner. The owner's also suspended through October 17th, during which time he isn't permitted to be at the Dolphins facility or represent the team at any team event. He also cannot attend any league meeting before the annual meeting in 2023. What are your thoughts on this? We always could see, you know, oh yeah, these guys talking. So, you know the talk he's having behind the back. We don't see this kind of stuff come to fruition in this way and really lead to like actual punishments.
I'm glad it happened. Now, the Dolphins didn't totally lose out on a first round pick, right? Because they have a second first round pick next year. So it's not
they own the Niners first.
Mm-hmm. The Niners first. So they're not totally losing out on a first round pick here. They do have a second one to use. You can't tamper. You just can't tamper. And I think what's more disappointing to me, more than the tampering thing, like I get it if you're trying to reach out to names for the future and you know you're trying to set future plans in place. I get that. It's you can't do it, but I understand why someone would want to try to set something up for the future. It's the bribery to lose games for Brian Flores. But was it like if they lost like 10 games, they get like he would get a $100,000 bonus
for every loss. That was for every loss of the season. He was offered $100,000. What was interesting, Mitch, is that the NFL claims that they found no evidence of that. Right? Convenient that the NFL protects the integrity of its game and the investigation and finds no evidence that there was any pay to lose scheme. But of course, the tampering stuff, they figured that out. Enough to punish somebody over it. But the NFL said they didn't find any, they didn't say it didn't happen. They kind of just skirted around it. They basically said, well, we don't know what happened there, but we do know this, and that's what they're getting punished for. I find that very convenient for the NFL that, we didn't actually find that teams are incentivized to lose. Oh yeah. Whoa. Convenient, huh? I don't know. That's interesting.
It is interesting, but the right penalty was handed down. He's got to pay something for it. So, it's a stiff one, but I think that it's the correct one. $1.5 million, by the way. Finally, something serious that we can actually roast someone about. $1.5 million is pocket change to this guy. Like, just find the hell out of him. I mean, $1.5 million. He can pull out of his pocket right now. I mean, that's just silly.
It's all arbitrary anyways, the numbers on that kind of stuff. But it's funny to see. Mitch, one more NFL tidbit here to hit on. Another contract extension for a wide receiver who is rumored to be on the trade block this offseason. They've all gotten paid, right? Isn't that funny? In fact, A.J. Brown tweeted this. We heard all about these wide receivers this offseason. Everyone got paid. I was the only one that got traded. That's what A.J. Brown said. Interesting how that works, huh? Terry McLaurin got his extension. A.J. Brown got his extension. D.K. Metcalf got his extension. And now Deebo Samuel gets his extension from the San Francisco 49ers. A three-year deal worth a maximum value of $73.5 million. $58 million in guarantees for Deebo Samuel. Reportedly, the team wanted a five-year deal. Deebo wanted a three-year deal. And they've settled on this three-year deal. What I find most interesting about it is this, specific incentives when it comes to rushing yards. We know how Debo's used in that. I've said this before, best running back in the league, Deebo Samuel. And he's going to be incentivized as such in his contract. This is a per year incentive on this 3-year contract. If he hits 380 plus rushing yards, he gets a $650,000 bonus. If he gets 3 rushing touchdowns in the season, he gets $150,000 bonus. So, it maxes out at $650,000 per year, but he could earn up to $2 million in incentives by being a part of the run game, which I just love that as part of incentives in a contract. I think that's great. He's more than worth this money, the way that this offense uses him and how versatile he is, especially with a young quarterback like Trey Lance, as we begin to learn just what he is as a quarterback in the NFL. But Deebo getting paid, justifiably so. Any thoughts here?
I love. I'm on 100% on board with you, and I don't know if you're on board with me with this, but 100%. But players like Deebo Samuel should get paid more than the average wide receiver or average running back.
Yeah.
In their top tier levels, they should be, because they do so much for an offense. You know, for Deebo to get this kind of money is it's great for him, and it's completely just that he gets this type of money. I really think that these Swiss Army knife guys should be getting paid more than any running back or wide receiver, because of what they can contribute to an offense and how diverse and that, you know, how diverse they are in their skill set. So I love the deal from Deebo. He got paid. You know, it's funny that you said they settled on 3 years. The Niners wanted 5. Deebo wanted 3, so they settled on 3. Yeah. Like, now Deebo got what he wanted. He wanted here.
That's how it works in sports nowadays. Yeah, when you're a superstar at that level and you're that important to the offense, yeah, you earn your worth and you get what you want. In this case, Deebo certainly did here with that 3-year deal. And as you said, of course, you know, the other name, you know, guys like Christian McCaffrey is another name of a type of player that would warrant making more than his quote unquote position group because of how much more they add to an offense, how multifaceted they are in their skill set. So Deebo getting paid, you love to see it for the Niners. A happy camper there for San Francisco. Mitch, let's jump over to the NBA. Oh, with some sad news. Departure of a legend, Bill Russell, 11-time NBA champion, passed away on Sunday at 88 years old. We talked about Bill Russell not that long ago here on the podcast when we did our top 10 NBA players of all time. Mitch had Bill Russell at number 3 on his top 10 list. I had Bill Russell at number 8. One of the greatest winners in NBA history. Just look at the numbers. I mean, he was incredible. One of the earliest superstars in the league, became a coach for the Celtics, was a pioneer for the black athlete in the NBA and in sports in general. And for that has become an icon for both what he did on the court and off the court and his impact there. So sad to see him go, but always. You know, it's sad to see legends like this pass, but I always enjoy the opportunity to reminisce on what made them great, what made them special. And I definitely did enjoy that this last few days with Bill Russell.
Yeah, I mean, it's always sad to see these legends kind of grow old and eventually pass away because of age and stuff. And but Bill Russell made an impact on the court and off the court during his playing days and even after his playing days. Like you said, an 11-time champion, a 2-time NCAA champion with the University of San Francisco.
The Dons. I mean, the Dons of the WCC. Yes, sir.
I mean, yeah, this guy took a really bad college program and made them into national champions. Look, the impact this guy has on the game, on and off the court, the impact that this guy had in the civil rights movement, advocacy for the black athlete, is just unparalleled, and it is going to be something that no one will ever forget and will continue to celebrate even posthumously for Bill Russell. So rest in peace to the legend. This guy meant so much to the world of sports and much, much more.
Yeah, and speaking of legends, Mitch, you know, it's interesting. They say that it comes in threes when we see like celebrity deaths and icons like that. And not that I'm predicting anything, but I guess we may have another one, because Vin Scully passed away. It was announced yesterday at the age of 94. Vin Scully, the iconic former Dodgers broadcaster, spent 67 years as the voice of the Dodgers and so much more. You know, what I found interesting last night is I was when I saw the news, just reflecting on Vin Scully, and honestly, Vin Scully is an icon to me in sports broadcasting. He is like the voice I think of when I think of sports broadcasting. He's one of the reasons why I pursue the career that I'm doing right now. And I mean, he's in the Sports Hour intro, folks. You heard him. You heard his voice not that long ago when you fired up the podcast, because that in a year that hasn't been so improbable, impossible has happened. That's the Kirk Gibson walk-off homer. That call is iconic, but he was a part of so much more. I always think of him, Mitch, as the Dodgers voice, right? And I'm a Dodgers fan, of course. That's what I think about him. But I didn't quite realize last night the scope of his impact, how many iconic moments he was a part of. Bill Buckner's failure in the World Series, the single that goes through his legs against the Mets. Hank Aaron's record-setting home run, where he broke Babe Ruth's 714 home run record. He was on the call for that. The immaculate reception and the NFC championship game. It's a madhouse, that candlestick. That's Vin Scully. I didn't even realize how many iconic moments that he had been a part of. And that was a lot of fun for me to reflect on last night and see so many sports fans celebrate. I know a lot of broadcasters will say that that's the voice that they think of, they grew up on, they idolized, they wanted to emulate. Vin Scully is an icon in my mind, one of the greats, one of the GOATs, and sad to see him go, but absolutely fun to reminisce about his impact and how his voice was a part of so many moments we love.
I mean, he's called college football games, college basketball games, NFL games, obviously multiple baseball games outside of the Dodgers. My heart feels heavy for my grandmother, because she's a lifelong Dodgers fan and loved Vin Scully. I just think that his final send off in his last game was something I heard the other night, and it actually brought a tear to my eye, and I would like to read it right here, right now, so you can hear it one more time. "You and I have been friends for a long time, but I know in my heart I've always needed you more than you've ever needed me, and I'll miss our time together more than I can say. But you know what? There will be a new day and eventually a new year, and when the upcoming winter gives way to spring, oh, rest assured, once again, it'll be time for Dodger baseball." And, that literally just put goosebumps on the back of my neck. I mean, just an iconic voice, a lovely, lovely man, and he will certainly be missed, not just in baseball, but across the sports world.
Yeah, no doubt. That's great. Thanks for reading that, Mitch. It's just crazy to think about. He was 25 years old when he called his first World Series back in 1953. And then 67 years later, as you mentioned, his final call, October 2nd, 2016. Iconic, the GOAT, the legend, Vin Scully. Rest in peace to him. Thoughts and prayers to his family and loved ones. They mourn his passing, and we remember his great impact here. Immortalized in many ways, immortalized here on the podcast with our Sports Hour intro. You'll love to see it. Vin Scully. Mitch, let's talk about the MLB trade deadline, which passed this past week in a flurry of movement on the final day. There were so many moves. We're not going to get into nearly all of them, but we wanted to highlight a handful of teams that really made the most moves, had the biggest impacts, changed the roster in the most significant ways. And we have to start, Mitch, with the San Diego Padres, who made the biggest move of the deadline, securing the young star from the Washington Nationals, Juan Soto. Mitch, you wisely predicted this on the last week's pod. You said, don't sleep on the Padres. And you even mentioned a few of the prospects that would end up becoming a part of that trade deal. So good on you, my friend. Well done here. But what were your thoughts on this trade? Break it down for the people on the prospects there, and just your thoughts on what the Padres are getting.
Yeah. The Padres, excuse me, Padres made out like bandits on this one. Really, I think they got the better end of the deal with this Juan Soto. Then they get the power hitting first baseman Josh Bell in addition to Juan Soto, while giving up left-handed pitcher Mackenzie Gore, outfielder Robert Hassel, shortstop CJ Abrams. Gore and Abrams were the ones that I mentioned, probably pieces of this deal. Outfielder James Wood, right-handed pitcher Jarlin Susana, and first baseman, former Yankee, former prospect to behold, Luke Vogt, also got dealt in that deal. Look, the Padres are serious about making this push, and we'll talk about the other deal that they did here in just a minute, but they're serious about making this push. I think this is a team that not only is built to win right now, but they believe they can win right now. And I had said it last week, if they really want to make the series push, they need to make this deal now, and they went ahead and got it done on the deadline. So Juan Soto, now a San Diego Padre, along with the power-hitting first baseman Josh Bell. Love to see it. I think this is probably the best destination for Juan Soto in the end of things.
Yeah, I mean, just thinking about the pairing of Juan Soto and Fernando Tatis Jr. is just incredible to think about.
And Manny Machado. Oh, my God.
And Manny Machado there and so much more talent. They also added Josh Hader, right, the closer reliever from the Milwaukee Brewers at the trade deadline as well, boosting that bullpen. And Mitch, the talent is there for the Padres. They're second in the NL West right now. They're like 11 or 12 games back of the Dodgers. The Dodgers are well ahead right now. That's fine. I mean, we know what the Dodgers are at this point. I guess my question about the Padres is, this is the type of move it feels like they have to make because they've underperformed for the last couple seasons. When they were supposed to be up there, people expected them to be at a contending level, and they haven't been. You have to make a move like this, and if there's a swing to be made in the trade market, like a 22 or 23 year old all-star, you know, superstar level guy like Juan Soto is certainly the right player to be targeting. And it could work out well for them. The talent is there. I just wonder if the organization, if the coaching, if the manager, if the staff, if all that's in place to be a winning franchise. That's my question now to the Padres. They were always talented. The talent is certainly not a question anymore with the additions of Juan Soto and Josh Hader and everything that they've done over the last couple of years. So now it's just a matter of, can they get it done when it matters? If they're in a playoff series with the Dodgers, can they beat them head to head? Can you beat them in 5 games? Can you beat them in 7 games? Like, that's the test is going to come. I hope we get to see that specific matchup when it comes to postseason time, because that will be a lot of fun.
Oh, it'll be a ton of fun. And I think they're there. I really do think they're there. I think we'll be seeing the Dodgers Padres NLDS, and that'll be a ton of fun to watch, because that'll be two exceptionally talented teams. So
no doubt. Mitch, one of the other teams we wanted to mention here, a team that made quite a few moves here, the New York Yankees, making some big moves. Aaron Judge having a historic season, 43 home runs already for Judge. He's just tearing it up right now. But they didn't stop then for making moves. Scott Efros, Lou Trevino added to the bullpen at the trade deadline. Added Frankie Montas as the starting another starting pitcher in this rotation. And then added Andrew Benintendi from the Red Sox in the outfield. And it just seems like this Yankees team is a team that knows where they're at, which is right now we're at the top of the AL. We should be good, but we haven't closed that gap in the last couple of years, right? They've fallen short. They've been good throughout the regular season, and then they've fallen short, or they didn't get it done. These moves signal to me, we know where we're at, but we need to just patch holes, add depth, add insurance here and there, you know, make sure we are fully stocked and loaded, ready to make a run in this postseason. And we'll see how it plays off for them, but they're certainly in the pole position right now in all of major leagues. And these moves seem like they align with that in that regard.
Yeah, no, the bullpen arms are fantastic. As an A's fan, I can tell you, Lou Trevino, very good arm that you can add to that bullpen. Fireballer, 98 plus on the gun. Guy's fantastic. Especially I can tell you a lot about Frankie Montas too. I mean, he was our ace. He was our guy that we leaned on. And, a guy that's going to be a very valuable piece of that Yankees rotation moving forward. As an A's fan, I knew it was coming. I mean, those were two guys that I just knew they were going to get dealt eventually. I think the really interesting one is Andrew Benintendi, who recently signed with the Royals prior to this season, was a former Red Sox, now a Yankee. Right. Seems like a very Johnny Damon move. Johnny Damon going from the Red Sox to the Yankees. But a very solid left-handed bat and a good glove in the outfield. And I think that everything that they added here definitely patches some depth holes that they needed to patch going into this postseason run. You're exactly right. This is a team that's been very, very close and has tons of young talent and hasn't been able to push through. And they've fallen short of expectations year in and year out for about the last 3 to 4 years. So good additions for the New York Yankees. Love the bullpen ad. Love Frankie Montas getting out of that rotation. And Andrew Benintendi, even if he's a platoon guy, is going to be someone that you can really, really rely on every second or third day.
No doubt, Mitch. The final team here we want to mention is the Houston Astros. Made a few moves. One, upgrading at center with Christian Vasquez, who came from the Red Sox. More important now that Castro's out for the remainder of the season. I believe they're starting catcher, Jason Castro, excuse me. So a big catch pickup there in Christian Vasquez. They make a move trading for Trey Mancini for the Baltimore Orioles. Also add Will Smith, the reliever. I believe he was with the Braves.
Yep.
Previously. Again, this is similar to the Yankees, right? Houston Astros are behind the Yankees in the AL, but they very good record. They're up there. They're going to be in the postseason mix. It is just about adding depth and they're improving where you can. Another bullpen arm, always good to have. Another bat to add to your mix. And Trey Mancini, I think these are all good moves. Not quite as big as maybe the Padres or the Yankees, but certainly felt like a team in similar vein to the Yankees. Good team, knows where they're at. Just adding a few pieces here and there to solidify that roster.
Yeah, I love the adding of Christian Vasquez. I know that Jason Castro is down for the rest of the year. So, love that adding. And I love the Trey Mancini add. It's hard for me to love anything that the Astros do because they're the fucking Astros and fuck the Astros. I'm a big Trey Mancini fan. Loved him during his time over there in Baltimore. Very talented player. Great with the bat. I mean, this guy swings a stick. And I love the fit over in Houston. He's going to have the short porches in right and left to go, hit some dong shots. Will Smith, a very reliable left-handed reliever arm. Love all these additions for the Astros. And you're right, exactly kind of in the same situation as the New York Yankees, patching up holes and trying to make yourself as solid as possible as they make a postseason run.
As it stands right now, Mitch, we're on August 3rd. Got 2 full months of baseball ahead of us before the postseason. How do you feel out of the AL? Those two teams are clearly at the top, Astros and Yankees. And I know that we were both bullish on the Blue Jays before this season. In fact, you had them in the World Series heading into this season. But if it came down to those two teams in the ALCS, Yankees and Astros, who would you be picking right now between those two?
I'm probably taking the Yankees in six. Big time arms on the front of that rotation. A lot of times in this postseason, you're using 3 to 4 arms in that rotation. You're not really relying on your fifth guy going into the postseason. So
sometimes it's like 2.5, 3.
Sometimes
it really depends. So
sometimes you're asking that top guy to throw 3 games in that 7-game series. So I really like the Yankees here. Aaron Judge is an absolute stud. They're pretty much solid everywhere in that lineup. The rotation is solid. They again add more to that bullpen that's already pretty solid. So I mean, I really like the Yankees over the Astros. If those two were to meet in the ALCS, I think just a little bit too. There's just like one too many holes in that Astros lineup still.
Yeah. I would agree with you there. I'd be leaning the Yankees right now too. It just feels like the Yankees are the hotter team right now and more complete at this moment. Again, 2 months left in this season, August, September. We'll see how it plays out at the end. But certainly those two are well ahead in the AL. And as I mentioned earlier, the Dodgers are well ahead in the NL, and we'll see how the rest of it plays out here in the last few months of the MLB season. Mitch, one last thing in the news here. You've got a NASCAR update for the folks.
Yeah, NASCAR went to the Brickyard, but we went to the road course. So the road course at the Brickyard. Tyler Reddick getting his second win of the year. The Corning, California native gets his second win of the year at the road course at the Brickyard. Austin Cindric second, Harrison Burton third, Todd Gilliland fourth, and Bubba Wallace fifth. Definitely a youth movement there in the top five. Not a whole lot of those drivers you usually see in the top five at the end of the race getting those top five finishing positions. I thought it was a really, really good race until about 15 laps left. And turn one in that road course is an absolute disaster. You go from 130, 40 plus down to a 90 degree corner that you got to shoot into. And we saw them going at 1.8 wide trying to get into that corner. I mean, wow. Bottlenecked. You're going from six lanes of racing down to about two. They have a joker access road they call it a joker lane or an access road, which is one that offshoots that you can get around back into the racetrack. And for me, it's just too much. I did not enjoy those last 15 laps of racing. There was way too many dive bombs, way too much wrecking. Guys were making really, really risky, high risk, low reward moves to try to advance positions. And maybe to the common fan that doesn't really pay attention to the etiquette of racing, it was exciting because guys were wrecking all over the place and this is the best thing ever. It's not good racing though. It's not good racing. And I really think with this new car next year, and NASCAR's already talked about this, about going back to the oval, which is what I think they should do. Run the traditional Brickyard race. It's a crown jewel event. Drivers take a lot of pride in winning that event. They should bring that event back so that guys have the opportunity to run that. And it might work out really well with this brand new car. I know that the Brickyard has had a hard time producing good racing over the last, several years on the oval. But this new car might provide something a little bit different to it. And we just haven't tried it out yet. So, I enjoyed the race. It was a good race. Congratulations, Tyler Reddick. The last 15 laps absolutely sucked. Hmm. Ross Chastain actually was the one that took the access road and wound up like running second after taking the access road, which taking the access road should never be a quicker way around the track. It should never be a quicker way around the track. And it was in this instance. And so he actually gets disqualified. I think he wound up running like down in the 20s. He got disqualified out of his position. We need to give the oval a try with this new car. Bring the oval back, bring the crown jewel back, and I think we'll see much better results because this road course, and I'm okay with it because the road course, quite honestly, we have a lot of road courses on the schedule, and we don't need another one just for the sake of running the road course. So give us the traditional Brickyard. Give us that back. We need that crown jewel event back in NASCAR.
Yeah, as someone who has attended that race before, shout out to my dad for a great 16th birthday, the Brickyard 400. Yeah, they should keep that on the rotation. That's a great race. It was a fantastic race. All righty, Mitch, thanks for the NASCAR update. Great as always. Before we hit the mid-roll, folks, Mitch has got a top five for us.
I do have a top five for you. And we've been doing the positional series for a while. And I still got some positions that we need to knock out. I got another special teams position that we need to knock out. But we'll get to that at a different time. We're going to take a break from that and go into something a little bit different. Dallin, when I say peanut butter, you say?
Jelly.
Okay. Right. When I say bacon, you say?
Sausage.
Oh, okay. Not the egg. Not. How about eggs? Like
chicken.
Oh,
which came first? bacon. People need to know.
Who needs? Yeah, who knows? I don't know. What I was getting at here, Don, really, was I was getting at duos. Things that pair up really well. I was getting things that pair up.
Bacon and sausage pair great. How dare you? Are you kidding me? Any man knows you just take both. Bacon or sausage, you just say yes, please. Yes, yeah, there's no, that's the correct answer to that. Yes, please.
Okay. All right. I mean, I agree with that sentiment. Absolutely.
Now I'm just hungry for breakfast. Go ahead. Sorry, Mitch.
I know. No. You're right. But, you know, they're great duos. Peanut butter and chocolate. Great duos.
That is a great duo.
Also,
Mitch Moe and Dallin. Not a bad duo.
Not a bad duo. This is the worst intro ever to a top five ever. But on this week's edition of Mitch Moe's top five list of the week, we're going to do the best duos in sports history.
Ooh. Okay. Well, I've got, not gonna lie, I just had like three or four come to mind. So we'll have to see how this list plays out, my friend.
All right. We are definitely going to have to see how this one plays out. Let's get some honorable mentions out of the way. Stephen Clay, honorable mention.
Okay.
Peyton Manning and Marvin Harrison, honorable mention. Wayne Gretzky and Mark Messier, a little hockey shout out there. Mark McGwire and Jose Canseco, the Bash Brothers, the Royd Brothers.
Yes.
Get them in there. Bill Russell and Bob Cousy. Shout out to the legend.
Yeah.
And then Stockton Malone just missing out on the top five.
Ooh.
A pair that I really wanted to put on.
What about you? Maybe you have this one on. Maybe I'm spoiling it. LeBron and his receding hairline. Did that tap the top five?
That should be on there. Yeah.
An honorable mention.
That headband just keeps getting higher and higher.
I'm just saying. Yeah, you're spraying that shit on now, LeBron. We can tell. All right, we can tell. Go.
Damn, that's a good one. I should have thought about that one. But no, they did not make the honorable mentions list. Maybe one day they will. But let's start off with number five. And Dallin, a pair that's close and near and dear to your heart, Kobe and Shaq. Kobe and Shaq at number five. Yes. Three championships won together, 8 seasons played together from 96 to 04, all with the Los Angeles Lakers. Look, they were the second iteration of the triangle offense under Phil Jackson, right? With Kobe, Shaq, and Rick Fox, this triangle offense was something that absolutely transcended basketball strategy at the time. It was a trademark for Phil Jackson, and he couldn't have had two better guys to run that offense than Kobe and Shaq. Minus the turmoil they may have had, in their post playing days. This duo still is one of the most dominant duos of all time. So Kobe and Shaq has to be here at number five.
Yeah, I love that, Mitch. And it is kind of incredible to think, like, if they didn't have the falling out that they did, and listen, almost every great pairing does. And you have two alphas that only last so long, right? Personality is just, it's only going to work so long. But if they could have kept it going, for another 5 years, I mean, who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows? Another ring or two they could have accomplished together. I mean, Shaq, even after he left the Lakers, was still a pretty good player, and Kobe obviously came into his prime at that time, became the best player in the league. So crazy to think about where they could be, maybe higher on the list if they didn't have that falling out. But so it goes.
Number four on the list, I have Joe Montana and Jerry Rice. Something I like to yell a lot when I pass something to someone is Montana and Rice, and just throw it up there and see what happens. Legendary quarterback receiver duo, 386 receptions, 6,710 yards, and 67 touchdowns in 77 games together. I believe they had 4 Super Bowls together with the San Francisco 49ers. Look, this is an all-time duo, one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time, paired up with the greatest receiver, if not the greatest football player of all time. Montana and Rice have to be on this list.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that was one of the duos that came to mind when you first said best duos of all time. So, yes, they found themselves on this list. That makes sense to me. I love it.
There we go. Number three on the list, I'm going Tom Brady and Rob Gronkowski.
Oh, okay.
Look, these guys, they won a lot together, right? 10 seasons together, 2010 to 2018, and then 2020 to last year. Looks like Gronk isn't coming back. Four championships won together. Look, when you have the greatest quarterback of all time paired up with the most physically dominant receiver of all time, well, maybe that's up for debate. Calvin Johnson was pretty physically dominant, but
yeah.
When you have one of the most physically dominant receivers of all time, you just can't ignore the greatness behind that. 14 touchdowns between Tom Brady and Gronk in the playoffs. That's the most ever between two players. Like I said, the four Super Bowls. This is by far the greatest tight end quarterback connection that we've ever seen, and it may be the best one that we will ever see. So Tom Brady and Rob Gronkowski.
Make
it number three on the list.
That has to be the duo with Tom. That has to be the other player with Tom Brady, right? When you think about how long his career was and how great Brady was, and I think almost what makes Brady so special is all the different guys he did it with, all the different iterations of a team he did it with. Wes Welkers and Randy Mosses, right, and Deion, right, Branches and Rob Gronkowski's, and all these different types of players is what almost makes it so impressive. But when there's one other player that comes to mind, like I think Wes Welker and I think Rob Gronkowski, probably the two. So I love Gronk and Brady there as a combo.
Yeah. Yeah. It has to be them. Julian Edelman and them with the other one, and him with the other one.
Yeah.
I mean, that's another good one. Number two on the list, we're going to take a step away from football, from baseball, from basketball, and from hockey. And we are going to talk about two volleyball players.
Mm.
This is Misty May Traynor and Kerry Walsh Jennings.
Yes. Yes. The
number two greatest duo of all time. Look, seven medals won together over 11 seasons, 2001 to 2009. And then they repaired back up in 2011 and 2012. Not just one of the greatest, not just the greatest Olympic duo of all time, but one of the greatest duos in sports of all time. Three Olympic gold medals, three world championships together. They rank first and second, respectively, that being Jennings, then Traynor, in victories and career winnings. And this pairing has won twice as many matches as any other women's pairing in beach volleyball history.
Wow.
They also hold the accomplishment of winning 112 matches in a row over 13 months. And that included 19 straight tournaments that they won.
Holy,
I mean,
shit.
Completely dominant. I honestly wanted to put him number one. I honestly did. But I mean, the names that are above them right now, it's really hard to do so. But I really wanted to put him number one, because that's when they were in their prime, when they were doing their thing in the Olympics and all the beach volleyball tournaments they were playing. I mean, this was a dominant tandem.
Yeah, no argument there for me, Mitch. I remember watching them in the Olympics. I mean, they were incredibly dominant. So, yeah, no question here. Not a name that came to mind, not a pairing that came to mind, but certainly worthy of that top two rank.
Yeah, I mean, 100% worthy. And the guys that I just had a really hard time putting them above, I only have to say two names for.
Yep.
That's Mike and Scotty.
Yep.
I mean,
come on. I mean, who else could you put number one?
You can't. You know? You can't put them. I mean, 10 seasons, six championships. Look, the perfect Batman and Robin combination. I mean, when you look for a Batman and Robin combination in sports, the poster child is Mike and Scotty. You don't even have to say their last names, and you know what the hell someone's talking about. A lot of people will say Jordan made Pippen the player that he is. I think that Pippen is just as talented without Mike, but them together is better than them apart. And you know, they were just the quintessential Batman and Robin combination in sports. Mike and Scotty got to give them the number one spot here.
Yeah. Again, no other duo in my mind. That was the first pairing that came to mind when you said best duos of all time. I was like, oh yeah, Michael Jordan, Scottie Pippen. And that was like the first combo that came to mind. So, exactly, you know, yeah. Montana Rice, Shaq, Kobe, Stockton, Malone, right? All those come after, but it was MJ and Scottie first. Great top five, greatest duos of all time. I'm trying to think, the only other one that came to mind that I thought about that you didn't mention was, and obviously as a Lakers fan, you know, that's what came to mind. Kareem and Magic. They had a long run together, but certainly were dominant when they did have the opportunity to cross careers.
Yeah, that one definitely crossed my mind as well, and definitely deserving of being an honorable mention. Honestly, they didn't win any championships together, but Durant and Westbrook crossed my mind too. They may not have necessarily complemented each other well, but you know they won a lot together. So you know maybe willing of, you know, deserving of being an honorable mention. Also, something that crossed my mind too, the Williams sisters, Venus and Serena.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, get some tennis in there. I don't like tennis particularly. I don't watch tennis ever. It's probably the most boring sport of all time. But, like, that's a great duo. I mean, those two sisters have dominated the world of tennis for the last 20 years. So you have to put them in the conversation as well.
Ricky Bobby, Cal Naughton Jr.
Oh, God. That should have been. Oh, that's a missed
opportunity.
I missed it. Oh, that's such a missed opportunity.
No, listen, you had to do a real list, dude. And you did a real list, and that's great. But if we were doing a fun list, that one's number one.
I'm adding them to honorable mentions just for the hell of it, you know, because they have to be there.
Honorable mention to Ricky Bobby, Cal Naughton Jr. Great stuff, Mitch. Run through 5 through 1 one more time.
Top five going back here is Kobe and Shaq at number 5. Number 4, Joe Montana, Jerry Rice. Number 3, Tom Brady, Rob Gronkowski. Number 2, Misty May Traynor and Kerry Walsh Jennings. And number 1, Michael Jordan, Scottie Pippen.
Great stuff, Mitch. Great top five as always, and we'll look forward to the continuation of the top five at each NFL position that you have been doing throughout this offseason and doing so well. We love that here on the podcast. That's going to do it for the first half of the podcast, folks. We're going to hit a break, do a little mid-roll. And when we come back, our college football season preview for the college football season 2022. So stick around. And we'll be right back. Thanks for checking out the Sports Hour today. We appreciate you wherever you're listening. But if you haven't already, we recommend you check us out and give us a listen on Anchor.
Anchor allows us to provide the best product to you. You can go support the Sports Hour and become a permanent part of the show, like my saint of a mother, Sammy, and my father, David, did.
You can even leave us voice messages with your thoughts and opinions that we can use on the show. Prove to us that you know better than me and Mitchmo.
Moral of the story, people, be more like Sammy and David. Go find us at anchor.fm/thesportshour, guys, and become a part of the conversation. What the hell are you waiting for? Welcome back in to the Sports Hour with Mitchmo and Dallin. Hope you enjoyed a little break here. Second half of the podcast coming up. Football season is among us, Dallin, and it is time to do a little preview into the college football season. We are so looking forward to bringing back the college tour to the Sports Hour. But before we do that, we have to preview a little bit in to what the season looks like ahead of us. And we have a few different, not necessarily superlatives, but a little bit of different categories that we're going to try to preview what the college football season is going to look like in 2022.
Yeah, excited to do this for the first time on the podcast. A little preview of the upcoming season. We're going to go conference by conference throughout the Power Five, and then look at the Group of Five as a whole with a number of categories, as Mitch mentioned, as a chance to just sort of look at the teams and some of the players are most excited to see this upcoming football season. So, Mitch, let's jump in and let's start in the place, in the home of the reigning national champion. That is the Southeastern Conference, the SEC, home of your Crimson Tide and the defending champion, Georgia Bulldogs.
Ooh.
Mitch, as we start this, I'll try to do this for all the conferences that we have this resource for, but I'm going to give you what the conference preseason media poll is, how the media that covers the teams in this conference ranked the teams at their media day ahead of this upcoming season in the SEC. The Georgia Bulldogs and the Alabama Crimson Tide were both voted to win their respective divisions, again, the East and the West, as they did this past season. Alabama received the overwhelming 158 votes to be crowned the SEC champion. Georgia received 18 votes. South Carolina received 3. Texas A&M received 1. And what has to be a clerical error or a gross oversight, Vanderbilt also received a vote to be the SEC champs. Yes, you heard that here right. The Vanderbilt Commodores.
Are you kidding me?
Somebody voted them to win the SEC. So again, that had to be clerical error, gross oversight, drunken madness. I don't know what that is, but something's wrong there.
It had to be an alum. It had to be a drunk alum. That's what it had to be.
The one Vandy beat writer is like, you know what? I really believe in these guys this year. So Mitch, the Crimson Tide, even though the Bulldogs win the Natty last year, they had a lot of talent on defense leave, depart for the NFL. The Alabama Crimson Tide are picked as the favorite in the SEC this year. Our first category is the best team. Is Alabama the best team in the SEC in 2022?
Roll damn Tide. You goddamn right they are. I mean, it has to be the Alabama Crimson Tide.
I'm shocked, man.
I mean, they got Bryce Young coming back for another year. Another Heisman winning year is what it should be for Bryce Young. We've talked about their defensive pieces. Will Anderson, you know, right now, probably projected to be a top three pick in next year's NFL draft. You mentioned Henry To'o To'o. Mm-hmm. Just last week, another dominant linebacker that's going to be a part of that defensive core. Nick Saban has absolutely dominated college football as far as the recruiting classes have gone. I know they technically got the second best recruiting class over this, you know, over this past offseason behind Jimbo Fisher and the Texas A&M Aggies. But Alabama is just they just reload every year, and this should definitely be the best team in the SEC.
Yeah, I'm with you there, Mitch. I did pick Alabama as the best team in this conference. Nick Saban today made comments that he said 2021 was a, quote, rebuilding year for Alabama. A rebuilding year that sees yourself in the national championship against a conference rival, huh? That's a hell of a rebuilding year in the world of college football. But this is clearly the year they're building towards. Bryce Young, a first-year starter last year, wins the Heisman, comes back again. As I mentioned last week on the podcast, Bryce Young, Will Anderson, either of those guys could be the number one overall pick in this upcoming NFL draft. So certainly the talent is there. Alabama, fully in on them as the best team in the SEC, Mitch. Your dark horse conference champ, a team that is in the top half of the league, projected to be one of the top teams, but could surprise everyone and win the conference championship. Now, all this is to say that in the SEC, this doesn't really happen, right? Like, if you're in a conference with Alabama and Georgia, like, your sneaky teams don't come out of the SEC. We just don't see it. But if there was a year that it happened, and this was the year, what team do you have as the dark horse conference champ?
I have Texas A&M. Texas A&M, I think they can get into a New Year's Six Bowl. I think that this is a team that is going to be a team that really capitalizes really well on their really great draft class or their really great recruiting class of this last offseason. Jimbo Fisher's got a great thing going over there in A&M. And I got Texas A&M being this dark horse champion.
Yeah, I like
that. I'll be damned if I give it to Georgia.
Yeah, I understand. The Aggies of Texas A&M voted to finish second in the SEC West behind Alabama, obviously. So I like that there. I'm also sticking with the SEC West here, Mitch, but I'm going to go with the Razorbacks. I'm going with Arkansas. Mm. Very high on this Arkansas team. Very excited to watch them come to Provo and play BYU here next month in September. But very high on this Arkansas team right now. They're voted third in the West, in the SEC West, behind Texas A&M, behind Alabama. But with KJ Jefferson leading the way and the return of a lot of good players from last year's team, I think Arkansas could be pretty good. So that's my dark horse conference champ. Overachieving team, Mitch. This is a team that's just going to overachieve. Maybe they're a team in the middle that we think is going to be towards the top. Maybe they're a team at the bottom that we feel like it's going to be a middle of the road or better team. But what team in the SEC do you feel like is going to exceed expectations in 2022?
I'm going to stay in the same vein as you and say Arkansas. I think that this is a 9 or 10 win team, but they could mess around and get 11 wins. I think that this is a team that is totally capable of being second in that SEC West behind Alabama, totally capable of getting a New Year's Six Bowl bid and, you know, being one of the better programs in the country by season's end. You mentioned KJ Jefferson, just an absolute dynamic talent that I think is going to lead the Razorbacks to a very successful season. I think this team is going to be better than maybe some perceive, because a lot of people, and rightfully so, they don't have a right to be high on Arkansas given the last few years. But this year is different. This year is different for Arkansas, that's for sure.
Yeah, I'm with you there, Mitch. Again, they were 9-4 last season. The over-under on their projected win total right now is 7.5. And I could definitely see a world where they win 10
over.
Games.
Take the over.
So, and 10 games would obviously be overachieving, I believe, for this Razorback squad. So I love that, Mitch. The overachieving team I went with is the Gamecocks of South Carolina. Right now, South Carolina voted to finish 5th in the SEC East behind Georgia, Kentucky, Tennessee, and Florida, respectively. But with the additions in the transfer portal that they've made, most notably at the quarterback position with Spencer Rattler, who was projected to be the number one overall pick in the 2022 draft last offseason, lost the job at Oklahoma. Things did not go well for him there. He's in South Carolina now, but I believe it's going to be a resurgent year for him. I think he's going to be very good for the Gamecocks, and obviously they do not have high expectations. Again, projected to finish 5th in the SEC East. Projected for an over-under win total of just 6 games. I think they could be an 8-win squad. I think they should be pretty decent and sneaky competitive in the SEC. So give me the Gamecocks, give me South Carolina as the overachieving team in this conference. Mitch, the best quarterback in this conference. Is it any question that it's Bryce Young?
No question at all. I mean, Bryce Young should be a Heisman finalist at the end of the year. This guy, based off the year that he put up and based off just another year of experience in the college football ranks, Bryce Young should be a Heisman finalist without question. And he will be the best quarterback in the SEC. There's just no doubt about that.
Yeah, he was voted by the media preseason first team all SEC team at quarterback. I did have Bryce Young as well as the best QB in the SEC. Heisman winner last year, should be right up there this season, should be right up there in the draft order in 2023. He's excellent. Russell Wilson 2.0. What else is there to say about Bryce Young? But the sleeper quarterback, Mitch. Quarterback people maybe aren't talking about enough. People maybe sleeping on a bit. The quarterback that should get a little more shine. I want to give a little spotlight here in the SEC conference. I'll go first, Mitch, and I'm going to give you the quarterback for the air raid offense of Mike Leach, Will Rogers. The guy who puts up gaudy numbers that you probably never even heard of. As a sophomore last year in the 2021 season, Rodgers attempted 683 passes. Yeah, that air raid offense of Mike Leach. You gotta love it. They throw the shit out of the ball. And Will Rodgers does it well. 4,700 passing yards, 36 touchdowns, and 9 interceptions last year, completing just under 74% of his passes for that Mike Leach-led Mississippi State team. Was a freshman starter in 2020, played just 9 games in that COVID-shortened season. 7-6 last year for the Mississippi State Bulldogs. But I believe in this kid, the numbers he puts up. I think he's going to be even better in 2022 with more experience. And we see these guys in the Mike Leach offense put up huge numbers. But Mike Leach has never been in a conference as good as the SEC. And to see a guy put up big numbers like that against the best competition, the best talent around, we talk about recruiting classes, the highest rated recruiting class in the league, that is impressive to me. Will Rogers is legit. He's not just a Mike Leach quarterback putting up big numbers at Washington State or Texas Tech or wherever. So I'm in on him. Don't sleep on the kid, the Bulldog from Mississippi State, Will Rogers. Mitch, who's your sleeper quarterback?
Love that pick, by the way. Will Rogers is going to have a fantastic year. I went with a guy that is maybe people are talking about, people are talking a lot about, but I think that he's going to really rise up NFL draft boards come the end of the year. That's KJ Jefferson. From Arkansas. Yes. I think that he is really going to rise up, a dual threat guy, a great arm, but outstanding athletic ability, a guy that can use his legs exceptionally well. And I think this is a guy that come to the end of the year, we may be talking about as the second best quarterback in the SEC, because I don't think anyone's taking Bryce Young's slot over there, but a guy that definitely could be rising up NFL draft boards come season's end is KJ Jefferson.
I love that, Mitch. A guy that I highlighted earlier this offseason on the podcast, my 5 quarterbacks to know to watch in college football this upcoming season, KJ Jefferson, an explosive, exciting player who I believe is being slept on still. I think this is a great pick here. Could certainly build more hype. Was not voted in the top 3 of the preseason teams. The second team quarterback in the SEC was Hendon Hooker, quarterback out of Tennessee, 3rd team. Will Levis, quarterback out of Kentucky. I love KJ Jefferson. Mitch, before we wrap up, great player on a bad team. I'm going to highlight for you guys a great player, a player who's probably going to be highly drafted in the upcoming 2023 NFL draft, a star in college football, who's on one of the worst teams in this conference. Some of them aren't really bad teams, but just not great teams comparatively. So for the SEC, we're going Tank Bigsby, the running back out of Auburn. Great running back, immediate impact guy when he came into college football as a freshman and has just continued to produce at a high, high level. First team preseason All-SEC team in the rankings was Tank Bigsby alongside Jahmyr Gibbs out of Alabama. But Bigsby is legit. Bigsby's put up big numbers, and I mentioned it last week when we talked about Xcharbonnet and my guys for the 2023 draft. This is a very good running back class, and Tank Bigsby is one of those guys that teams are going to be looking at. Has 1,900 rushing yards in 2 seasons at Auburn, 15 total touchdowns. Last season had 1,099 rushing yards and 10 touchdowns on 223 attempts. Auburn's not going to be good, Midge. Auburn was voted to finish last in the SEC West division. Should be one of the worst teams in the SEC, but Tank Bigsby is going to be a first team. He's going to be a first round pick. He's going to be one of the top. If running backs are selected in the first round, it's going to be Bijan Robinson from Texas, and it's going to be Tank Bigsby out of Auburn. Could be a first round pick in this draft. So you may not watch Auburn this year, but watch Tank Bigsby. He's a lot of fun.
Don't watch Auburn. Don't watch Tank Bigsby. I mean,
we'll watch him when they play Alabama. How about that?
Yeah, well, I'll be watching the Iron Bowl. I guarantee you that.
One of the great rivalries in the world of college football. Mitch, let's jump over the Big Ten, the Big Ten conference. Last year, Michigan wins this conference. Shocking. Ohio State, shocking many by pulling through, being a college football playoff team this past season under Jim Harbaugh. This season, though, Mitch, a little different. I think we're both in agreement here on who the best team in the Big Ten is going to be in 2022.
Ohio State, right?
Yeah.
It's got to be Ohio State.
The Buckeyes.
The Buckeyes. I mean, what Ryan Day has going on over there in Columbus is just a powerhouse. C.J. Stroud is going to be one of the top two quarterback prospects coming out of college in the next year's NFL draft. Guy's got it all. Ohio State's got to be the best team out of this conference.
No doubt. And I think that correlates with one of the things coming up later. We'll talk more about that then. But yes, Ohio State is obviously full of talent, a perennial college football playoff contender. I think they should be the favorite coming into 2022. Mitch, your dark horse conference champ for the Big Ten.
I got Wisconsin. And you know, a team that is always seems to be pretty well put together. They always are flirting around in that top 25 rankings, the occasional top 10 ranking, but they're always really, really well put together. And they are again this year. I like Wisconsin to pull off some big wins and really flirt with maybe competing with Ohio State in that Big Ten championship game.
I love this, Mitch, because I chose the Badgers as well. I went with Wisconsin as well. Over under 9 wins for Wisconsin here, but Graham Mertz, their young quarterback, really burst on the scene in 2022 early in that season, was putting up big numbers, then had a real freshman cliff. His sophomore season last year was underwhelming. Not what many expected, but I think this kid's really talented. I think he's going to have a big junior year, really set himself up for that final season in college football in 2023, a chance to be one of the best quarterbacks in the world of college football next in the 2023 season. But I think he's going to have a breakout this year. Graham Mertz, again, a quarterback out of Wisconsin. And that's kind of the key here for me. Listen, we know Wisconsin. They run the ball well. They got great O-line. They're stingy on defense. Like, that is the MO. But they've never had, right, like, a top-tier quarterback like this. A real, like, legitimate quarterback take them over the edge. That's always what's been lacking for Wisconsin in the past. Is Mertz that guy? We'll find out. But I'm going to buy in on him and buy in on Wisconsin being sneaky good this year. I'm right there with you. Dark Horse Conference champ for Wisconsin. Mitch, you're overachieving team in the Big Ten next season.
I got Michigan State as being one of those teams that can overachieve a little bit. Great roster put together again. It's going to be a lot of fun to see Michigan State take over Big Brother Michigan and be a more powerful and a more a force that's going to be more. You're going to have to worry about more than the University of Michigan. So give me the Spartans in this one.
Yeah, Mel Tucker and the Spartans certainly had a surprising season last year. Over or under projection right now, 7.5 games, and I do think they're going to be over that. I love this as an overachieving team. I think people are probably overlooking the Spartans, expecting them to regress from last season with some of the losses that they've had, most notably Ken Walker II, right? The running back who was huge for them last season. Obviously a big departure, but I think Michigan State should be pretty good. I like that, Mitch. The team that I went with, and this is a team that I talked about a bit when we did my 5 quarterbacks to know or to watch in the world of college football in 2022, but I'm going with Maryland. I'm going with the Terrapins, Mitch, led by Taulia Tagovailoa, who, again, as I talked about in that segment, I believe in him this year. I think he's going to have an even a bigger season. Right now, Maryland's projected to win just 6 games. They're not projected to be very good, but an 8-9 win season, I think that's in the cards for the Terps. They have a very talented wide receiver group surrounding Tagovailoa. Just a matter of that growth. Can he be enough? Can that offense can be really dominant in Big Ten? Like, non-conference, whatever, you can put up points, but like, in conference play, can you be productive? Can you put up points? Can you be competitive? That's going to be the key for the Maryland Terrapins this season. But I'm going to buy in that they're better than that 6-win mark, maybe an 8-win, maybe a 9-win team, maybe a little sneaky there in the Big Ten. I'm going with Maryland. Mitch, best quarterback. This is what I was alluding to earlier. The reason why I'm so high on Ohio State is because I think they have by and far the best quarterback in this conference, and that is C.J. Stroud. right, who could be the number one quarterback selected in the 2023 draft. Could be Bryce Young, could be CJ Stroud. Those are certainly the top two guys right now at the moment. But CJ Stroud is legit Heisman candidate, could be a Heisman winner. He's the best quarterback, and that's, I think, why I'm so locked in on, I think it's just going to be Ohio State's year in this conference.
I mean, yeah, it's gotta be CJ Stroud. Gotta be him. There's no one even close. No one even close.
No, I don't think so. But let's talk about the sleeper, because there are still some very interesting quarterbacks in this conference. Some we've already mentioned here. Who are you going with for your sleeper quarterback?
I'm going with Cade McNamara from Michigan. Guy who's a senior. He's been a slow developer. But he is shown to have, you know, he's shown to have some really, really big games, and be really successful. Last year, you know, he completed 64% of his passes, 15 touchdowns on 6 interceptions, quarterback rating of 141.9, hyper efficient. But, you know, he's just, the fact of the matter is just that anyone that we mention is going to be overshadowed by CJ Stroud. But I would really keep an eye on Cade McNamara. I think that this is a guy that can develop into a good third day quarterback drafted in the NFL draft coming up next year.
I like that, Mitch. The quarterback that came to mind, the first quarterback that came to mind when I thought of sleeper QBs in the Big Ten, is Aiden O'Connell, quarterback out of Purdue. Go Boilermakers. Got to give them a shout out here on the podcast. And Aiden O'Connell had a big season last year. Started 6 games in 2019 as a sophomore, 3 games in 2020 in a COVID-shortened season. But last year, his full-time starter for the Boilermakers was very effective. 3,700 passing yards, 28 touchdowns, 11 interceptions, completed 71.6% of his passes on 440 attempts. He was efficient in the Big Ten last season and should be poised for a fourth year, cap it all off season this year for Purdue. I think he should be able to put up big numbers in Purdue. One of those teams not expected to do very much in this conference is, as usual, they're over under right now, just 7 games. But they went 9-4 last year. And I think that that could be a similar mark this year with Aiden O'Connell under center. I like him. I think he's a very good college quarterback, one of the more underrated ones, one of the more under-discussed ones in college football. That's why I wanted to give him a shout-out here under sleeper quarterbacks. That's Aiden O'Connell, quarterback out of Purdue. Mitch, great player on a bad team. The name I want to highlight here is Peter Skoronski. He's an offensive tackle from Northwestern. Northwestern, not going to be good this year, in case you weren't aware. Over-under right now, 3.5 wins for Northwestern. So it's not going to be good. But I talked about Blake Freeland being tackled number one in the NFL draft in 2023. Right now, I bet the betting markets would have this guy as the number one tackle in 2023, Peter Skoronski, out of Northwestern. They produced some good offensive linemen in the past. The Big Ten known to produce good O-line. Northwestern known for that. Skoronski is right up in there in pedigree. He's got to be one of those top tackles off the board in this upcoming draft, and just one of the top tackles in college football this year. So a name to keep an eye on. You're not going to be watching much Northwestern this year, but if you catch a glimpse, watch out for Skoronski, the tackle. He's going to be big time. Mitch, let's jump over to the ACC. It's time for the ACC. Last year, it was the Pittsburgh Panthers winning this division, led by Kenny Pickett, who went on to be a first-round pick. This season, Clemson is favored in the preseason poll. They've been favored seven of the last 8 years. No surprise there. They've been pretty dominant. But they were favored by, I'll say, a decent margin. Yeah, a decent margin. They were pretty clearly the favorite here in the ACC, Clemson in 2022. Where do you stand on this, Mitch? Are you rolling with the Tigers, or you have somebody else in mind? The best team in the ACC.
I got Clemson. I got Clemson in this one. But what Debo's got going on over there in Clemson is – just he's building a brand. He's building a brand in Clemson. Clemson's prominently, you know, very quickly becoming one of the best brands in college football. DJ Uiagalelei. I always screw up his name.
Uiagalelei.
Uiagalelei. That's right. I always forget Beautiful. That extra syllable. Uiagalelei. I think we'll have a bounce back year for Clemson. I think that he will have a season that will be one of the top tier seasons for one of the top tier performances for all of quarterbacks in college football. So Clemson's on the top of the list for me as far as the ACC goes.
Yeah, you know, the Tigers are an interesting one, and you mentioned Uiagalelei. A lot of people expected a big season from him in 2021, and that he would be in that conversation with C.J. Stroud and Bryce Young heading into this season as one of those top draftable guys. But he did underperform last year and was really shaky at times. This is a big season for DJ to prove himself as not only a college quarterback, but as an NFL draft prospect. It makes sense that Clemson's number one, but I'm going to go with NC State. I'm rolling with the Wolfpack here. And Devin Leary, the quarterback, is the big reason why. I'm very high on Leary. Things will be really good this year. Sneaky in the draft world, but just sneaky in the world of college football. NC State, second in votes for the overall champion of the ACC behind Clemson. Clemson received 103 votes. NC State, 38. Nobody else had more than 8 votes. So it's really those two teams at the top. But I'm rolling with the Wolfpack. I feel like they are the favorite right now. I'm not going to buy. Clemson has a lot of talent, but with how shaky DJ was last year, and I know they won 9 games in like a down year for Clemson, but just a little hesitant. Losing Brett Venables, how much does that hurt? You know, the impact of that coaching staff and losing some of those names, you know, something I'm watching this year in the ACC. But your Dark Horse Conference champ, Mitch, if Clemson, NC State at the top, I went with Wake Forest here. It's my Dark Horse Conference champ. They were in the conference championship game last year against Pitt and fell short. They had a really good year last year, but they're not really looked in the same light despite a lot of returning talent. Voted to finish just third in the Atlantic Division behind Clemson and NC State. Had the fourth most votes for the overall champ of the ACC behind Clemson, NC State, and Miami. But I don't know. Sam Hartman returns, who put up all those numbers last year for this Demon Deacons team, and I just don't think we should be sleeping on them quite yet. That was the dark horse that I had. To the ACC.
C-A-N-E-S, Canes. Give me University of Miami as the dark horse here. Look, Mario Cristobal leaving Oregon, going back home to Miami to lead the Canes. I feel like this is going to be the beginning of a new era of Miami football. Bring back the bad boys of college football, the Miami Hurricanes. I would love to see it, and I think that Mario Cristobal is going to be the beginning of that. Bringing home a hometown guy definitely is going to help that program. I like the Canes to be the dark horse, and they got a talented team. I mean, preseason rankings have them inside the top 25.
Yeah, Tyler Van Dyke is one of those breakout candidates at quarterback. What a good season last year. Took over as a starter, could be big as a junior or maybe sophomore, technically. Who knows? With the COVID years, everyone's eligibility is weird, but. Suffice it to say, Van Dyke could have a big year in Miami. Could have a big year, Mitch. Overachieving team. I went with the Louisville Cardinals here. I like Louisville here, led by Malik Cunningham, their exciting quarterback. Louisville voted to finish fourth in the Atlantic Division. Didn't receive a vote at all for overall champ, even though Florida State and Boston College, both of which are behind them in the division rankings, both received votes to actually win the conference, but Louisville didn't receive a single one of those votes. And I think they'd be a little overlooked here. I could see them being an 8-win team. Could be sneaky competitive in the ACC. In an ACC that I know you picked Clemson, I picked NC State, but like, let's be honest, it feels pretty wide open, doesn't it? In this conference in 2022, it doesn't. Alabama, Ohio State, like those are clear favorites. But this is where it starts to get like, you know, I don't know. It could be 4, 5, 6 different teams that end up walking away with the conference championship at the end of the season.
Absolutely. I mean, there's a definitely a wide. You mentioned Wake Forest earlier too, a team that showed a lot of success last year that could be serious competitors for this. My overachieving team, I'm going with the University of Virginia, and I think that over under win loss total cannot be very high. Right? I'm not sure exactly what it is, but it can't be very high. This team around my guy is not very solid. But and I'm gonna jump into my best quarterback in the conference while I'm talking about this. Brandon Armstrong might throw for 60 touchdowns. I don't know. Brandon Armstrong might be the best quarterback in college football at the end of the year. I am that big of a believer this guy. It's so fitting that his last name is Armstrong because he's got a strong ass arm. This guy can sling it. I love Brandon Armstrong from the University of Virginia, and I think that he may lead the Virginia, these Virginia Cavaliers to a season where they vastly overperform, and win way more games than they're supposed to win.
Yeah, with the departure of Bronco Mendenhall, right, the longtime coach who retired, they brought in Tony Elliott, right, from Clemson to take over for this program. So a lot of people are viewing them to have a down year. Virginia was picked to finish fourth in the Coastal Division behind Miami, Pitt, and North Carolina. So, yeah, not a lot of expectation for the Wahoos this year, Mitch. But I mean, Brandon Armstrong is fantastic. So I love that you're banking on him, banking on this team and that talent to carry through there. I like that for your overachieving team and your best quarterback. My best quarterback, I mentioned him earlier when I mentioned the Wolfpack, but Devin Leary, quarterback of NC State. Watch this kid. Keep an eye on this kid. Could be one of those sleeper names, and as far as the NFL draft goes, who comes out of nowhere, ends up being a top 10 pick, and we're like, wait, who we were talking about Stroud and Young and Levis, and who the hell is this kid? Like, Leary could be one of those names. So keep an eye on him. Best quarterback in the ACC. But a sleeper quarterback, Mitch, and another name we've already mentioned, but Sam Hartman, the Wake Forest quarterback. I wanted to give him a shout out here. 4-year starter for Wake Forest. Last season, 508 attempts. 4,200 passing yards, 39 touchdowns, 14 interceptions completed, just under 59% of his passes. Slings the ball around, makes big plays, not very effective, not an NFL prospect in that regard, but man, Hartman is fun. I hope he gets even more shine. He had such a good year last year that it feels like it almost got overshadowed by Kenny Pickett because Pickett had an even better year in that conference. But Hartman deserves some shine here, and I think he could be, at the end of the season, the best quarterback in this division. Or sorry, in this conference.
He certainly could be. I went a little bit different direction. I went Keaton Slovis from Pitt.
Ooh, okay.
Transferring over from USC. Look, things in USC did just not pan out for Keaton Slovis. Brand new start in Pitt. They're just coming out of the Kenny Pickett regime. There's opportunity for him there. There's opportunity for him there, and I would love to see Keaton Slovis succeed in Pitt. So I got him as my sleeper quarterback.
I love that, Mitch. Player to know, great player on a bad team. We're going to go with another running back here. I brought up Tank Bigsby earlier, part of a great running back class, but right behind him in this running back class is Sean Tucker, the running back out of Syracuse. 5'10", 210. And he is just, man, he is a fun running back to watch. Last season, 247 rushing attempts, 1,500 yards and 12 touchdowns. The orange, listen, they're not going to be good. they're voted to finish last in the Atlantic Division. They're probably going to be the worst team in the ACC. But Sean Tucker, if you're going to watch a Syracuse game, the running back, he's going to be fun to watch. Could be one of the top running back draft prospects in 2023. Should be a fun NFL back when he gets that opportunity, but a fun player to keep an eye on. That's Sean Tucker again, running back out of Syracuse. Mitch, two Power 5 conferences less. Let's jump over to the Big 12. the Big 12 last season, the Baylor Bears, when the conference represented the Big 12 in the Sugar Bowl, they lose quite a bit of talent from last year's squad, quite a bit of talent on the defense to the draft and other places. But Baylor, yet again, picked to win the conference in 2022. They were picked by the media, the favorite, to repeat as conference champs. Oklahoma had been 6 years in a row had been the favorite to win the division. But they were second behind Baylor for the 2022 season, as the media sees it. I had Baylor as the best team in the Big 12. They lost a lot of talent, Mitch, but they're going to come back just as strong. They recruit at a high level. They develop at a high level. I think they're going to replace a lot of what they lost last year and not really miss a beat. I think the Big 12 is up for grabs. There's four or five teams I think are really good in this conference, but I feel most confident right now in the Baylor Bears heading into 2022. What are your thoughts on this conference? Who's the best team in the Big 12?
I have a lot of faith in Brett Venables and what he's going to do at Oklahoma. Mm. So I took Oklahoma as, again, the best team in this division. It just seems like that. I just have a lot of faith in what he can do defensively. We saw him do it time in and time out at Clemson. Correct me if I'm wrong, Clemson, Brett Venables. I'm really confident what he can do defensively. The offensive stuff will work itself out, but I think that what Oklahoma will be able to do defensively under Venables puts them at the top of the conference for me.
Yeah, I think a lot of that's going to come down to the quarterback, the transfer, right? Dylan Gabriel, who is the preseason All Big 12 newcomer of the year, voted on by the media at this past media day. But Dylan Gabriel is going to be huge, right? You know, that defense, I love that perspective, Mitch. I think coming over from Clemson, Venables will be good there. But what does the offense look like without Lincoln Riley? And can Dylan Gabriel just kind of keep that in place with some of the other talent there? Marvin Mims, the wide receiver there, he's a hell of a talent. One of the kids I'm very excited about in college football this year for the Sooners. I love that, Mitch. You went to Oklahoma. What about your dark horse conference champion team?
I got Kansas State. Kansas State.
Let's go. We both went Wildcats. You love to see it.
Look, they probably have the best offensive line in the conference. They're bringing back Deuce Vaughn to run the ball, who had like a ridiculous, like almost 1,900 yards and 22 touchdowns last year. Felix and Adudike Uzama had more sacks than any other Power 5 pass rusher not named Will Anderson last year. So
hell of company to be in. Incredible, Mitch, that Kansas State may have the two best players in this conference. And those two guys you just named, those might be the two best players in this conference. And they play for Kansas State. That is crazy. I love it.
Yeah, I mean, and we're not even talking about the transfer from Nebraska. Adrian Martinez is going to come over and play quarterback for him, who's kind of looking for that last chance bid to make himself a legitimate NFL prospect. I think that this gives him a great shot to do it. The over under right now at 6.5 wins for Kansas State. Hammer the over on that. I think that they're going to win. I think they could be a 10 win team. I really do.
I'm right there with you, Mitch. That was my conference champ dark horse candidate. I really do think Kansas State could be sneaky good. They were voted to finish fifth in the Big 12 by the media this year behind Baylor, Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, and Texas. And that is the first team that I was like, man, don't sleep on the Wildcats. That's all I'm saying. It could be good. It could be good this year. Mitch, your overachieving team in the Big 12. I'll go first here, actually. I'll go first. The Big 12 overachieving team I went with was Iowa State. The Cyclones, Mitch, led by Matt Campbell. And listen, I know they've lost a lot this past season. Brock Purdy, Breece Hall, a lot of the foundational pieces to this team. And subsequently, they were ranked sixth by the media heading into this upcoming season. But man, Matt Campbell has been so good at Iowa State, so consistent. They've always found a way with solid defense and a great running game that I'm just going to bet on that. I'm just going to bet on that to work for 7, 8, 9 wins next year. Like, I'm just going to trust Matt Campbell in this program to be good. They seem to have established that in the last couple of years under him. I think in the new Big 12, they're going to be one of the mainstays of just consistency. Baylor, Iowa State, Oklahoma State, there's some of the teams I look at in the new Big 12. It's, man, they've really proven to just be good year in and year out. That's how I view the Cyclones. And I don't know. I know it's not going to be pretty. They're not nearly as talented. They're not a conference champ candidate by any means, but they should be a very solid team as they always do. I'm going to trust Matt Campbell on that and go Iowa State.
I don't even have a word for you, Dallin. All I have to do is show you this.
Oh, he did the horns down.
Texas should be an overachieving team. They should be.
Okay.
And here's the thing is they've had every opportunity to be better than what they have been over the last few years, and they haven't done it. They have one of the best running backs in the nation in Bijan Robinson. They have one of the most highly touted college prospects in a long time, and Quinn Ewers is going to be taking snaps underneath them. Texas should be okay. They should be okay. I'm not going to say they're fully back, but they should be okay. I have some hesitancy, though, because it's Texas, and Texas has shown to be unreliable over the last few years, even when they have all the talent on their side. So I'm putting Texas as my overachieving team, but I'm a little hesitant to do so at the same time.
Okay. Yeah, fair enough, Mitch. Best quarterback in the Big 12. I believe you stuck with the Longhorns here at this one.
I did. I put Quinn Ewers. I picked Quinn Ewers. I mean, he hasn't played a snap
in college football, but you're in on it.
We've seen the videos. We've seen the film of Quinn Ewers. My God, this guy's got all the talent. NIL deals. He's making a ton of money too. We've seen everything that we need to see about this guy. He should be a generational talent. However, we've seen guys like that fall through a lot. We've seen guys like that not live up to expectations over and over again. So cautiously, I put Quinn Ewers as the best quarterback in this conference.
Yeah, and I don't blame you, Mitch, mainly because there's just not a lot of great quarterbacks in this conference. Like, realistically, I mean, you look at these teams and there's unproven guys, there's some okay starters, there's some transfers. There's not a lot of, like, man, that guy's legit in this conference right now. There could be Quinn Ewers, other guys develop. The name that I went with, who was voted first team Big 12 by the media at Media Days last month, but I went with Spencer Sanders, the quarterback out of Oklahoma State. Sanders, in 2021, 2,800 passing yards, 20 touchdowns, 12 interceptions. He's not asked to do a lot in that Cowboys offense. Threw the ball less than 400 times last season. But he's a three-year starter. Has started 33 games for Oklahoma State, entering his fourth season as a starter. Well experienced. Should have ample opportunity to not only be good this year, but to be the Big 12 champs, to be the best in this conference. And I know I picked Baylor to be the best team, but Oklahoma State's going to be pretty good. They were in the Big 12 championship game last year, and I think they're going to be right back there this year. And Spencer Sanders should have a big season leading the Cowboys. So I went Spencer Sanders, best quarterback. For the sleeper quarterback, though, I debated here a bit, but I ended up at Blake Shapen, quarterback out of Baylor. He was not the starter last year, Mitch. That was Gary Bohannon. But Gary Bohannon hit the transfer portal this offseason, right? Interesting note, right? You win your conference as the starter. You have to have been pretty good to have led your team to a conference championship in a New Year's Six game. And yet, even with eligibility, you entered the transfer portal and end up at USF, University of South Florida. Why would that be? Maybe it's because the coaching staff preferred the guy behind you, wanted to give him the opportunity, felt better about their situation with Blake Shapen than they did the starter last year. And that's exactly what happened with Baylor. He won the starting job last year, a lot because of what he did in the Big 12 championship game against Oklahoma State. Took over for an injured Bohannon, completed 17 consecutive passes in the Big 12 championship game off the bench. That is an incredible performance. He's going to have full reign of this Baylor offense this season, and he should be pretty good. I mean, if you are a conference champion in a New Year's Six team and you let your starting quarterback walk in the transfer portal for the kid behind him, you got to believe that that kid's going to be legit. And if the coaching staff believes he's legit, I'm going to take their word for it. And I'm going to believe him too. So Blake Shapen is the kid I took, sleeper quarterback, starting quarterback for Baylor. Mitch, who is your sleeper quarterback in the Big 12?
I'm going to go back to a guy that we mentioned already. That's Adrian Martinez. A brand new opportunity here at K-State. We just mentioned how good that team was going to be around him, and I think this is going to give him the best opportunity that he's had since entering college to be a winner. And so I really like Adrian Martinez to be a sleeper quarterback, maybe even become the best quarterback in this conference, given the talent that's going to be around him.
Okay, I like it, Mitch. Great player on a bad team. I'm going to go with Quentin Johnston, the wide receiver out of TCU. TCU picked to finish seventh in the Big 12. But Quentin Johnston, one of the more intriguing draft prospects heading into this season. He's right now the wide receiver 3, according to PFF, behind Keyshawn Booty out of LSU and Jackson Smith and Jigba at Ohio State. Johnston is 6'4", 212 pounds. What makes him so intriguing, Mitch, Johnston has 1,091 receiving yards and 8 scores over the past 2 seasons. That's not very good. Right, that's not notable. A lot of guys have done that. What is notable is that he's done all of that in 2 seasons on just 55 catches, meaning that he has averaged 19.8 yards per reception on average for his career. An extremely explosive player. And the reason why he's only had 55 catches is because of the quarterback play at TCU. It has not been good. Is it going to be much better this year? Probably not. But NFL teams are going to bank on this athleticism and this just freak of nature that he is as a prospect over production in college. 55 catches, and he's broken 26 tackles. He's broken half of the tackles of the catches he's had. I mean, that is an incredible number for an incredibly raw player. Again, will be a junior this year. First team, all Big 12 in the preseason. Quentin Johnston out of TCU, a name to watch, one of the more intriguing wide receiver prospects in this upcoming draft. Mitch, the final Power 5 conference here, the Pac-12 conference. Last year, University of Utah was the Pac-12 champ representing the conference in the Rose Bowl, defeated Oregon, the Ducks, twice last season for the second time in the Pac-12 championship game to earn that berth. And Mitch, that was who I went with as the best team in 2022. I think Utah returns a lot of talent from last year's team. Should be pretty much 9 or 10 wins, just as good as they were last year. I expect a lot of similar things from the Utes on offense and on defense. They're a solid program. They've proven that here. I didn't really hesitate putting them as the best team in the Pac-12. Where did you land?
I had Utah as well, and I think that outside Alabama and Ohio State, Utah might be the most complete team in all of college football.
Wow.
You look at their quarterback, Cameron Rising, big fan of him. I think that he's going to have a stellar year. They bring back Tavion Thomas, who's going to be a wide receiver. He's part of that preseason All-Pac-12.
Yeah.
He's part of that preseason All-Pac-12 first team offense. Braden Daniels is going to be a part of that offensive line. Just so much talent that's retained and brought back from the year before. Utah feels like they had maybe a little bit outperformed last year, and that this year they really are primed to be a serious contender for this college football playoff. I think that Utah will be a part of the college football playoff. I really do. I really like this Utah team.
Well, yeah, I'm not quite as far there. I mean, if they win the Pac-12, they'll be a top 10 team. You know, they'll be like up there. I don't know if they're called football playoff team. I do have some questions about certain parts of this roster, but they should be at the top of the Pac-12. No doubt, Mitch. Your dark horse conference champ, though, who are you going with?
Going with Oregon. Oregon. Okay. Lost the a lot Ducks. Of talent, but they're bringing in Bo Nix out of Auburn through the transfer portal. This is a team that always seems to that over the last, you know, 12, 13 years has seemed to really just find a way to put it together. They seem to have a really competent quarterback under center with Bo Nix coming over from Auburn. So I like Oregon. I like Oregon as the dark horse.
All right, Mitch, I am going to stick in the same state as you, but I am going to go with Oregon State. I'm going with the Beavers. Coming off of a successful 2021 season, Jonathan Smith, the head coach, has this Oregon State program going in the right direction. 7-6 last year, but for a large part of the season, they seemed like they were rolling in the right direction. Should finish off the right way, but I think it's going to come to fruition in 2022. Led by Chance Nolan, the quarterback. What a good season last year. BJ Baylor, a running back. I think they're going to be pretty good. Don't sleep on the Beavers. Ranked fifth by the Pac-12 media in the preseason poll behind Utah, Oregon, USC, and UCLA. But, man, Oregon State, I kind of like the Beavers. They're a sneaky team in the Pac-12. If you get a chance to watch them, they're a fun team to watch. Mitch, you're overachieving team in this conference.
I went USC. Now, look, I understand. It's USC. Why? How could they be overachievers? Ever since those sanctions came down with the recruiting stuff, it's just it hasn't been right in USC, right? They lost a lot of scholarships to deal out. Things just haven't been right with USC. They get the transfer over from Caleb Williams through the transfer portal. Lincoln Riley becomes the new head coach. They seem like a 9-10 win team. But what if they mess around and go 11-1 and just go, oops, okay, we're in the Pac-12 championship? I think that this makes them an overachiever if they are in that situation, because we haven't been given any reason over the last decade to really think that USC could be a serious contender in the Pac-12 championship game. So with the additions of Caleb Williams, with the addition of Lincoln Riley, the guys they're bringing back, I think that USC could be an overachiever and wind up in a Pac-12 championship game.
Yeah, I like that. I mean, certainly USC is one of those unknowns, right, with all the new things there, Jordan Addison, Caleb Williams, Lincoln Riley. Like, is it good or is it bad? Is it 7 wins or is it 11 wins? Like, there's a large range of outcomes for the Trojans this year. I think you're right to highlight them here, Mitch. The overachieving team I went with was the Washington Huskies. Voted to finish 6th in the Pac-12 this season. But I kind of like the Huskies this year. New head coach in Kalen DeBoer, coming from Fresno State. But they bring back the starter quarterback in Dylan Morris. Got a lot of talent on the defensive side of the ball, led most notably by Zion Tupuola-Fatui, who should be one of the top defensive line prospects in this upcoming draft. Jackson Kirkland along the offensive line. I met him at Pac-12 Media Day last year. Great kid. Good tackle prospect. Could have been a second or third round pick last year in the draft, but decided to come back. But I just feel like this Washington team could have the momentum going in the right direction. I feel like the Pac-12, kind of like the ACC, is pretty wide open. I feel like Utah, USC, Oregon, Oregon State. Like, I think there's a lot of teams that could contend. And Washington is one of those, like, if everything breaks right and they're second in the Pac-12 North, or they're tied with Oregon, you know, at the end of the season there, like, I wouldn't be surprised. So UW is the team that came to mind for me when it came to overachieving teams in the Pac-12. Your best quarterback in this conference, Mitch, is it Caleb Williams? Full stop.
It is Caleb Williams.
Yeah.
I think that Caleb Williams, what he proved at Oklahoma the previous year, what he's bringing over to USC with the same head coach, I think that he has all the makings to be the best quarterback in this conference.
Yeah, I'm with you there. He's voted first team all Pac-12 on offense for quarterback. The other name I think you can maybe throw in there is Cam Rising, as you mentioned, out of Utah. He was second team there. But yeah, I mean, Caleb Williams is legit. We'll see what the new situation looks like, but we have high expectations for him at USC in 2022. Mid, your sleeper quarterback, though. Who are the people sleeping on here?
I think we're sleeping on Bo Nix a little bit. I know that he didn't. I don't think that, you know, he didn't have the success at Auburn that I think we expected him to have. Obviously, he was a legacy player there, right? His dad played quarterback at University of Auburn. Things didn't work out there. He transfers over to Oregon, and I think that he's going to fit this Oregon system really well. An athletic quarterback with a good arm. I think that Bo Nix is a name you need to keep your eye on as the season goes on.
A little SEC bias here from Mitch, perhaps.
Never for the Auburn Tigers. Never.
You know, Dan Lanning out of Georgia comes over as the new head coach. In fact, their offensive coordinator, Kenny Dillingham, was Bo Nix's offensive coordinator. He was on the staff at Auburn under Gus Malzahn. So Bo Nix has familiarity with his new OC, and that perhaps can help him at Oregon make that transition a little easier. Perhaps be a little productive for the Ducks. I like that there. Mitch, the name that I went with, a name that a lot in the college football world are very excited to watch in 2022, is Cameron Ward, the quarterback out of Washington State. He's most notable, Mitch, because he came from Incarnate Word. Yes, Incarnate Word of the FCS level last year, but was one of the most highly touted quarterbacks available this past offseason. Had a number of offers from a lot of different places. Put up massive numbers at the FCS level last season in 13 games, threw the ball 590 times, completed 65% of his passes for 4,600 yards, 47 touchdowns, and just 10 interceptions. Threw the lights out of the ball. Ends up at Washington State, 6'2", 220. He's an interesting prospect because he comes from the FCS level. He put up such big numbers there. What does it look like at the Power 5 level in college football, right? What does it look like at Washington State? Well, if he has a big year this year, Mitch, at Washington State, best believe people are going to be hyped about this kid in the draft world, be hyped about this kid among the best quarterbacks in college football. Don't sleep on Cameron Ward, Cam Ward, quarterback at Owazu, a name to keep an eye on, a sneaky name amongst college football quarterbacks. And speaking of college football quarterbacks, Mitch, my great player on a bad team for the Pac-12 is yet another one of those great quarterbacks. And I'm going to go with Tanner McKee, quarterback out of Stanford. Stanford picked to finish eighth in the Pac-12 this season. Tanner McKee is one of those interesting prospects. An LDS kid, member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, served in mission, has come back to Stanford, played last year. So he's an older prospect with not a lot of experience, but was highly touted out of high school. PFF has him as quarterback 3 in this upcoming draft, only behind Bryce Young and CJ Stroud. They are very high on Tanner McKee. 6'6", 226 pounds. His numbers aren't going to blow you away. 2,300 passing yards, 15 touchdowns, 7 picks last year. Like, that is whatever, but the tape is great. He's highly touted out of high school. If he puts it all together, if he is the full package, even on a bad Stanford team, he could be one of the top quarterbacks in this upcoming draft. He has that potential. He has the pedigree. He has the size. He has everything you want if it all comes together in the right way for him. So definitely a name to pay attention to this year in college football. Tanner McKee, quarterback out of Stanford. Mitch, to wrap it up, we want to highlight the group of five in independents here. Briefly, let's start with the best group of five team, the best G5 team in the country. And I believe that we have the same team here for this.
Houston?
We got the Houston Cougars out of the AAC.
Yeah, I love Houston. I mean, this is a team that's kind of always kind of stuck around that top 25 in the country ranking. Never been really super high, but man, they just always seem to put it together. So yeah, I really like Houston as this group of five team.
Yeah. About Houston is one of those really interesting teams heading into the Big 12 in 2023. Right. And they've got a lot of momentum. They're not like They're not Cincinnati. They're not BYU. They haven't had like a high level of success, but they've been pretty good under Dana Holgorsen. And now heading into this season, I feel like this will be the real culmination of Group of Five identity for Houston that really sets them up for the P5 level next year. They should have a big year, 10 plus wins. They should earn that New Year's Six bid as the top Group of Five team in the country, led by Clayton Tune, a fantastic quarterback, a name to keep an eye on in the world of college football among quarterbacks. Should be one of the best in the Group of Five level. Houston's going to be legit. They have great NFL talent. They're going to fit well in the Big 12. I think they're going to be pretty competitive early, and they have a lot of potential in the future of that league. So, yes, we're both in on Houston for the best Group of Five team. What about your dark horse team here for the Group of Five? So dark horse in terms of a team that could potentially be that number one Group of Five at the end of the season and earn that automatic qualifier for the New Year's Six.
I'm going to go with SMU.
Southern, ooh, the Mustangs. Southern,
I'm going to go with Southern Methodist. Yeah.
Okay.
They got a great quarterback under center, Tanner Mordecai.
Yes,
6'3", 218 senior out of Waco, Texas. Has the name of a guy that sounds like he should be the bad guy in some sort of high school football movie. look, this guy is hyper talented. SMU has been on the rise over the last couple of years, and with a solid veteran quarterback under center, this could be the year they all put it together. So I went with SMU here.
Yeah, I love that, Mitch. The name that I went with, the team that came to mind here, is Fresno State. I talked about Jake Haener, quarterbacks to watch in 2022. He returned to Fresno State, could have potentially transferred to Washington, follow his head coach, Kalen DeBoer, but he returns to Fresno State. Jeff Tedford comes back, and the Bulldogs should be pretty competitive in the Mountain West and could be the best team out of that conference, could be the best Group of Five team. If Haener is as good as his potential is, this could be a really special team in the Group of Five and could certainly be that number one Group of Five team earning that New Year's Six bid. So I went with the Fresno State Bulldogs here. Best quarterback, Mitch, I went with my guy, Jaren Hall. I went with Jaren Hall, Mitch, because we included the independents in this, and, you know, I think Jaren is the best quarterback of this group. There's a lot of good Group of Five quarterbacks. We mentioned two of them right off the bat that I think could have competed for this. Tune, Jake Haener, two of the names that came to mind, but I'm going to go with my boy Jaren, who I think is one of the best quarterbacks in college football and should be one of the top quarterbacks in the NFL draft in 2023.
Very close second for me to put Jaren Hall there. I think that he has the opportunity to make the biggest leap by any means, by all means. He can definitely make the biggest leap of any of these quarterbacks in this of the G5 and independents. But as far as the best quarterback goes, I went with Jake Haener. We saw the hot start that he came off to at the beginning of the year last year. Fresno State getting into the top 25, going undefeated, putting up prolific numbers, 33 touchdowns, 9 interceptions, averaging 315 yards a game last year, over 4,000 yards passing. Jake Haener is definitely a guy that I can only imagine that he's going to get better. Given the success that he had last year. So I went with Jake Haener as the best quarterback in this of the Group of Five guys.
I love that, Mitch. What about your sleeper quarterback in this group?
I went back to Tanner Mordecai. I went back to Tanner Mordecai here. Yep. He's shown to have all the measurables. He's a guy that just continues to show improvement every time he steps back onto the field. I just really like Tanner Mordecai for SMU. I think that, you know, if they want to be a serious contender and be one of the top G5 teams, Tanner Mordecai is going to have to step up, and I think that he is fully capable of doing that.
I love that, Mitch. A quarterback I'm definitely going to keep an eye on this upcoming season. The name I went with was sleeper quarterback here. And I'm looking at this from mainly a draft perspective because this guy has been on the map of college football for the last couple years. But that's Grayson McCall, the signal caller, the quarterback for the Chanticleers of Coastal Carolina. Obviously, they had their breakout season in 2020. Had a good season last year. Started the season ranked, did not end the season ranked in the top 25, but will return it and have a good season this year. What's interesting about McCall, Mitch, is he's been extremely efficient. The last two seasons as a starter, 53 touchdowns and just 6 interceptions, right? But they don't run an NFL offense at Coastal Carolina. They don't run a normal offense at Coastal Carolina. It is Jimmy Chatwell has this. It's like an RPO triple option hybrid kind of offense. It's a lot of running from Grayson McCall on top of what he does in the passing game. Has 200 carries in the past two seasons as a quarterback to go with about 500 pass attempts. Last season, 2,800 yards, 27 touchdowns, 3 interceptions. So he's effective when he passes the ball, but he's just not asked to do it in a traditional way. He is 6'3", 210, a little bit of a slight build, doesn't have that ideal NFL frame, but if he could just show more of as a passer, as just a traditional pocket passer, what things that you'll see in the NFL, if he could show more of that, I think he becomes an interesting NFL prospect just because he's been so good at the college level. He's done everything you've asked him to do, but can he show that he can operate efficiently in a more NFL-esque offense instead of this unique, specific group of five college football offense that we see him in at Coastal Carolina? That's the one thing that intrigues me about Grayson McCall. He's a highly efficient college quarterback. He's a good college quarterback. We know that already about him. What more can he be outside of that? That's what I want to see in 2022, Mitch. Great player on a bad team. Man, I'm excited to talk about this guy, Mitch. This is a prospect I am circling. One of the more interesting ones for me in this upcoming draft. Andre Carter II, the edge rusher, edge defender out of Army. That's right. Shout out to the Independents. Shout out to the Black Knights up there at West Point. Andre Carter, Mitch, 6'7", 265 pounds. Two players last year in college football, Mitch, shared the highest rated pass rushing grade, according to PFF, in the country. And those two players were Aiden Hutchinson and Andre Carter. Incredible company to keep for a guy so extremely raw with so much potential. Right now, PFF has him as the number 11 prospect in the upcoming draft. One of the top edge prospects, extremely raw prospect, again at 6'7", 265, but racked up 14 pressures in just 71 pass rushing snaps last season. Had 14 and a half sacks in 12 games last season for Army. He is just a force to be reckoned with and a raw prospect because he just isn't tested at Army. Playing an independent schedule, just doesn't get reps against top-tier talents. If he was getting reps in the SEC doing what he was doing, he'd be a top-5 prospect. He'd be a top-3 prospect. He'd be up there with the Will Andersons of the world at the edge, but he just doesn't get those opportunities. What will that look like in 2022? Probably much of what we've seen so far. Probably much of the same. But he's going to be one of those prospects when he tets off the charts, when it comes to the draft time, people are going to be like, he's going to be good. He's going to move up the draft boards. He's going to be that projection. But it could be at the next level. Andre Carter II, an interesting name to watch. Great player on not a good team in the group of five in Independence, the edge out of Army. Mitch, that is it for the college football preview. We've gone conference by conference to the Power Five and the group of five as a whole. Some of the best teams, some of the best players. For the world of college football, the college football season kicks off in just 3 weeks with week 0 of the season. Most of the college football world will kick off on Labor Day weekend. But we wanted to get this in before the NFL season preview stuff, before we get into a lot of the nitty gritty there, give you some college football. Mitch, this has been fun. I love that we've incorporated more college football into our podcast, and I cannot wait to do that more with the campus tour this season. And to do this college football preview was a ton of fun. Cannot wait, my friend, for the upcoming season.
I can't wait either, man. It's going to be a hell of a time to incorporate more college football into the podcast. And man, we're getting football back. We're just getting football back. This is great. This is great. We've been waiting since February for this. Football is finally back, and I couldn't be more excited.
Yeah, cannot wait. Fun to break this down for you guys and preview the upcoming fall football season. If you are a college football fan and appreciate that, that's awesome. If you are new to the world of college football, don't really follow around, we hope, maybe take a bit of an interest and follow along with us as we talk about it throughout the fall. But Mitch, that's going to do it on the podcast today. That is it. That's all we got. That's all we got. It's been a lengthy one, been a plentiful one here on the Sports Hour. If you don't already, follow our social medias. The Twitter's at Sports Hour Guys, Instagram at The Sports Hour Guys, the TikTok at the Sports Hour Guys. You might have saw a new TikTok from our boy Mitch Mo out there. Shout out to Mitch Mo. Great little TikTok there. If you haven't checked out the website already, thesportshourguys.wordpress.com. So much good content out there for the folks that we try to provide, not just here on the podcast feed, but everywhere on the interwebs. So if you don't already, check us out in all of those places. Mitch, remind the people about Anchor.
Anchor is the only place that you become a permanent part of the conversation. Go to anchor.fm/thesportshour. Guys, leave us a voice message. We will play it live here on the show, and you can become a permanent part of the conversation. Whatever question you have, go ahead and ask it at anchor.fm/thesportshour. Guys, you can go listen to our podcast wherever you get your podcasts at. That's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher. Doesn't matter where, you'll find us there when you search the Sports Hour with Mitch Mo and Dallin. Go on Apple Podcasts, leave us a rating review, tell us that we suck, because Dallin, that is the only way that we can get better.
Mitch, what was the name of your two coworkers that are going to be new listeners to the podcast?
Oh, Chris and Lee.
Chris and Lee. I'd invite you right now to go on Apple Podcasts. Leave us whatever star rating you want. I'm not going to tell you what to leave us. If you think we're a 3-star podcast, leave it. But I want you to go on there, Chris and Lee, I'm talking to you right now, and tell us that we suck. Okay? I want you to go on the podcast.
We suck balls.
And leave us a review and tell us that we suck. Suck balls. Suck whatever, I guess. Whatever you think we suck. But just go on there and do that for us, if you wouldn't mind. We would appreciate that. Because
we're
always trying to get better.
Here's the thing, is Chris doesn't have an iPhone, so he's going to have to do it on Spotify.
Okay.
And Lee's too nice. Lee, who has an iPhone that can go on Apple Podcasts, is too nice of a guy to tell us we suck balls. But I will urge him to tell us that we suck balls.
Lee, we implore you to put your good-mannered nature aside and please tell us that we suck big hairy balls. Okay? That we'd appreciate that.
Big massive nuts.
That's the one. Because that's what we want here on the podcast. Guys, we appreciate you sticking around this episode for us. We cannot wait for the next month. We got so much fun stuff ahead. Fantasy football preview, NFL Megasode, award predictions. We'll have guests on. We'll have some fun content as we get ready for the fall and a lot of football ahead. So if you don't already, the social medias, the podcast feed, subscribe, keep up with all that, because we will have content galore for you. And we cannot wait. Mitch, this has been a pleasure. You look beautiful, my friend. Your face brings me joy and happiness every week.
Buddy, no.
Beautiful mustache. It's incredible. Guys, we love you. We appreciate you. And we will catch you next week.
See ya.